It's Tuesday at 8 p.m. and you're listening to The Best Possible Taste on West Limerick 102 FM.
You're listening to The Best Possible Taste on West Limerick 102 FM.
Now, my next guest is an award-winning beekeeper, entrepreneur, hobby gardener, and internationally published writer. Originally from a small island in Sweden, she now lives in East Cork with her son, two dogs, a flock of rescue chickens, and lots of bees. Let's find out more about Hannah Bachmo, founder of Hannah's Bees.
Bon appetit.
Yummy.
Grubs up.
Delicious.
Hannah, you're very welcome to the programme. I was reading a bit about you there on your website and I discovered that you're from Sweden originally, but you're now living in Cork. So tell me a bit about growing up in Sweden on a little island that had no cars.
Hi, Sharon. Thank you for having me on. Yeah, it's quite a transition, really, to come from a little island in Sweden and ending up in little island in Ireland. So for me, growing up was idyllic. I don't think that we can use any other word for it. Very, very small island off the west coast of Sweden. No cars. Everyone was cycling or walking or boating. You know, my dad is a boat builder and my mother had a she's an academic, but she's like me. She has a lot of different interests. So when we grew up, she had a fish shop in the basement. We grew a lot of our own food. And I think that my love of nature came from my upbringing. We were free range kids and we roamed the island.
So at what point then did you end up in Ireland?
So I was, as a teenager, I was heavily engaged in politics, student politics, and I travelled all around Europe working with student issues, educational issues concerning school students in particular. And I, on one of my travels in Budapest, I actually met somebody from Ireland, fell in love and moved over here. I was only supposed to stay for a month. Over 20 years later, I'm still here.
You obviously like Cork, or else you wouldn't still be there. Are there similarities between it and your childhood in Sweden?
Oh, I think I've made a lot of the similarities, if that makes any sense. I've transported a lot of the things that I loved from growing up. I've transported to my home here in Cork. Irish people are lovely, and I think it's not the weather. The weather isn't the reason why I'm still here. It must be the people. And also, I love growing food and the Irish climate, believe it or not, it means that you can actually grow food all year round, which is amazing. Like in Sweden, you just can't do that unless you have a heated greenhouse. And so I can go out, you know, rain, hail or sunshine. I can go out in my garden any day of the year and pick dinner. I mean, isn't that just amazing?
And a luxury.
Yeah, absolutely. My mother, she jokes and she calls me a food snob, you know, and what she means isn't that I have to have the best of everything and go into the fancy shops and buy all the stuff. What she means is that I love the process of making the food, the luxury of being able to go out, grow my food, pick it and cook with it. And it is, as you call it, it is a fantastic luxury, but it's also a free luxury. You know, it's something that's available to a lot of people. And I think that, you know, if we could just plant some more fruit trees or grow a few more spuds, like the amazing food that we get from that, and also happiness that we get from being able to do that and showing our children that pure joy is really quite simple.
And the flavor, I think, is always better as well if you can grow your own food or at least buy it off a local producer that's growing it.
Yeah, I think that you just know all the blood, sweat and tears that got into it.
I suppose it kind of makes sense that your love of bees came about because of the time you were spending in the garden. But before we get on to that, you actually were designing and making wedding dresses.
Yeah, that's what I did for nearly 20 years. So when I came to Ireland first, I started, as so many other people who came here at that time, started working in Apple. I just couldn't hack it. I just the phones drove me nuts. So I did something else that I really love doing. I applied for a job as a wedding dressmaker, and the shop where I got a job closed down after I think 6 months or so of me starting working there. I wasn't entitled to anything, no social welfare, no nothing. So I just had to set up my own business. I was 20 at the time. I set up my own business, and I've had my own business since. And I loved it. Making wedding dresses is such a creative process. You start with fabric, you start with an idea and a woman who wants to look special. And you spend days and weeks and creating something that makes her look and feel fabulous. I loved that part of it. But I really wanted to be outside more. So that's how my transition happened. That's one of the reasons, I think.
You need to have certain skills to design and make clothes, and in particular, wedding dresses. So, was that a skill that you had grown up with? Because, like, certainly, whenever I think about my childhood, my grandmother was the go-to person to turn up the trousers or to fix the rip. But it's not a skill that I asked her to share with me, or that would have come naturally to me. So, unfortunately, it has been lost. Tell me about your dressmaking skills.
We, as children, we were always encouraged to figure out how things worked. And I think that that has permeated everything that I do. You learn things, you learn skills. I love working with my hands, and I also love working with my head. And creating wedding dresses is it's just a combination of the two. You have to focus, you have to be very, very meticulous, but you also have to allow creativity to come into that. And I think that it's just enjoying the whole process of creating something and seeing the finished product. And that was something actually, coincidentally, that I couldn't find in the politics when I was doing that. You spend, so much time talking and you never see any results. I think these result-driven jobs are much, much better for me, much more suitable. Yeah, much more satisfying. But yeah, I come from a woman who create things, who sew. My grandmothers, they were weaving, they were embroidering. They made everything that they had to use in their homes. I still have linen kitchen towels that what is it, my great great grandmother made out of linen, and it wouldn't surprise me if they also grew the linen. So it's just these skills, I suppose, that I carry that with me, that enthusiasm and fascination for the creative process. And that makes it somewhat easier. If you're lacking a skill, you just figure out a way to learn it, and then you practice, and then you have it. But I love that creative process of sewing, and actually, it's something that has stood with me when I transitioned into beekeeping, because there are some movements that are very, very similar. For instance, if you're grafting new queens, you need to pick up the little larva with a very small, and they're tiny, and it's very similar to hand sewing or beading. So it's some very similarities that are I didn't know that they would be there.
So tell me about making the transition then from wedding dress designer and creator to beekeeper, because being a wedding dress designer and maker is very much a word of mouth business, I feel. So I'd say you were getting lots of calls or inquiries from brides who would have been very disappointed to hear that you weren't in that line of business anymore.
I still get that, believe it or not, yeah. On a regular basis, I get phone calls saying, you made my sister's wedding dress, can you make mine? But yes, very much word of mouth. But it's the transition, let me see. For me, it was all about wanting to be outside and growing my own food. And when I started planting trees, I planted really kind of, for me, exotic trees, because like in Sweden, you can't grow a lot of the stuff that you can grow here. Like my mother, for instance, she's amazed that we can grow bay leaf and rosemary outside, because in Sweden we just can't. So I planted nectarine trees and peach trees. And then I realized that I didn't really have any pollinators for them because they flower so early that they either need to be self-pollinated or you need to go in and pollinate them with a little brush, or you need honeybees. And so that was my problem-solving brain kind of was activated, and I say, okay, so I want peaches, then that means that I need bees. So I joined a beginner's beekeeping course in Cork, and as they say, the rest is history. I just got hooked. But for quite a long time then I was doing both the wedding dresses and the bees alongside each other. And then actually just before COVID hit, I made the decision to give up wedding dresses, and I made my last wedding dress in December 2019, just before COVID. So it was perfect for me in one sense, because there were so many other people who kind of lost their footing when COVID arrived and made a transition to a new job or a new career then. For me, I think my strength is that I had already decided that. Because of course, when COVID came, the wedding dress business and the wedding industry just shut down. There was no way to make a living at that time. And I remember vividly there were people who were calling me when in December when I said, no, I'm going to give up wedding dresses, and said, Hannah, you have a really fabulous business there, you know, don't do it. The same people rang me again, you know, several months after, and said, you know what? You were so lucky. And I was. I'm really happy that I made that decision. It stood me well. And I just love the bees.
Tell me then about the, like, how many apiaries do you have and how did you get them going?
Jeepers, I have to count now. When you're a beekeeper and you get obsessed and hooked, you just keep acquiring bees, and it gets quite a lot after a while. So at the moment I have about 70 colonies, and I have them split between I think five apiaries, but I also move the bees around so that I can take advantage of different crops that would be in different locations. So for instance, I would move the bees in the spring to, I have a farmer who grow rapeseed every year in different locations. So I get an early crop of rapeseed honey. And then of course we get the summer honey. In the end of the summer, then the bees are moved up to the mountains to forage on heather, which is another amazing honey. And of course, there's been a lot of kind of studies looking into the health benefits of Irish heather honey recently, and showing quite encouraging results, let's say. I mean, they've figured out that it has a lot of the same health properties that Manuka honey has.
So are the bees all native Irish honeybees?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's no, for me, there is no point to keep any other bee. Our native Irish bees have evolved alongside the flora in this country, and they're perfectly suited. The difference between the native Irish honeybee and imported species in a lot of cases is that the imported species, their colony sizes is much bigger. They grow quite rapidly. And in a poor year, the beekeepers have to feed their bees, for instance, to keep them alive. Whereas the Irish honeybee is a bit more frugal. They don't grow as large as a lot of the imported species in colony size, that is. And they're also much better at economizing their resources in the hive. So in a good year, our Irish honeybees are going to produce a decent crop of honey, but also in a poor year for nectar, when nectar is concerned, like we had a couple of years ago, we had the worst year for honey production in over 30 years. The Irish bees did reasonably well that year, because they were so good at preserving their energies. And also we have to remember that a lot of our flora has been evolved, the flora and the fauna have evolved alongside each other. So let's say, for instance, we have, you know, s some species of flowers that are that are excellent in our Irish climate. So let's say the fuchsia, for instance, you have the fuchsia. If you can picture the flower, you know that the flower is hanging upside down. And that means that in a wet and windy summer, the pollen and the nectar is preserved for the bee because it doesn't get washed out. And of course we have the blackberry as well. Now those flowers are facing up, but we have quite an abundant crop of blackberry honey, and that would be the main source of nectar and pollen for bees during the honey flow, which usually occurs from midsummer and onwards for the next 3 weeks or so. But then of course after the heather flow, if and when we get it, it's not certain we get it every year. It depends on the moisture content in the ground. It also depends on the temperature at the time that the heather is flowering in August. We also have the ivy honey, which is a fantastic honey. So this is honey that the bees will gather nectar from the ivy flower, which is the last flower that flower before the winter, and we get a really potent honey, really thick. It goes rock hard inside in the hive, but it's excellent for if you have a cold or a cough, any kind of respiratory complaint, and it's really, really strong scent and flavor. And the bees, of course, will gather a lot of pollen from the ivy, and from this pollen, they'll use that to feed the larvae that are going into the winter, and hopefully then the colony will come out of the winter quite strong then.
Whenever you're talking about those different locations and you're talking about the ivy and the heather and the rapeseed, I think it's important to highlight that they all influence the flavor and texture of the honey.
Absolutely, yeah. So bees obviously will make honey from nectar. So they gather nectar from the flowers to make the honey. And nectar contains sugars. Honey typically contains 80% sugars, but the makeup of those sugars is different depending on the nectar. So, for instance, the ivy nectar and rapeseed nectar is a high glucose nectar. So you have glucose and fructose in the nectar, and the glucose solidifies. So the rapeseed honey in the spring and the ivy honey in the autumn, as I said, they go nearly rock hard. So you need to extract it while it's still liquid, or you need to melt the comb down in order to get to it. But that honey is quite sweet, but especially in the case of the rapeseed honey. And it's a great favorite for many kids, actually. It's spreadable as well, so when they eat it, it doesn't spill. And then of course you have the other, that the high fructose honeys then, which would be typically our wildflower honeys or our summer blossom honey, and that is why that honey will remain liquid for longer. And of course, in our wildflower honey, the bees will gather nectar from so many different flowers, so you get a really nice rounded flavor from that honey. And I don't know if it's because of the landscape here in Ireland. We have so many little fields and ditches and hedgerows. There's so many different flowers that our honey has such a rounded flavor. It does always so well at international competitions. And I think it's because we have such a mixture of flowers in growing in our countryside.
You have such a wealth of knowledge, Hannah. Just listening to you there, you could talk all day about it. Like, there is so much to share whenever it comes to it, but it's a really impressive knowledge. You have an online shop now where you sell not just your honey, but other bee-related products.
Yeah, absolutely. As a beekeeper in Ireland, I mean, they always say that you have to be completely nuts to think that you're going to be able to make a living from beekeeping in Ireland. And I think they're right, because every commercial beekeeper I know is a little bit crazy, but we love what we do, absolutely. But that means that, let's say, in a bad year, you definitely can't make enough, you don't make enough honey to make things go around. So you have to diversify. Some people sell bees. I have decided to go down the route of creating, I have a wide range of other honeybee products. So pure beeswax candles. I was the first Irish producer of the reusable beeswax wraps. This feels like a long, long time ago because they've become such commonplace in Irish households now, and that's fabulous. And also polishes, and I have a range of Irish grown flower seeds that are perfectly suitable for pollinators. So you can buy Hannah's Bees products in a lot of retail shops around Ireland and also in the US. But I also have a online shop at hannahsbees.ie. There is also, if you're interested in bees, as it's clearly I'm completely obsessed by them. I write about bees and I talk a lot about bees. So on my website, there is an extensive kind of catalogue of blogs about bees, all things pollinators.
Amazing. And like in terms of the products you've mentioned, obviously the honey, the beeswax wrap, there's polish, soap, candles. Like it sounds like you use everything, like there's no waste or very little waste.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's because I grew up on an island. There was no waste on the island. Everything had to come onto the island and nothing would leave. So you always reused everything. You repurposed things that didn't have a use anymore. And for me, it's really important to be able to use everything that comes from the beehive. So there's quite a lot of work in particularly in getting the beeswax to be of a quality or a clean enough after you've processed it to be able to use it. But it's such a fantastic product. Like bees will eat somewhere between 6 to 9 kilos of honey to make only 1 kilo of beeswax. So I think after they've gone through all that work in making it, I think it's a sin not to use it.
Well, listen, it's been really interesting talking to you, and I really appreciate you taking the time to do that. And just remind everybody again of your web address before you go.
Yeah, it is www.hannahsbees.ie, and there's only one H in Hannah, and that's in the beginning.
Sounds familiar, Hannah.
Thank you, Sharon.
You're listening to the best possible taste on West Limerick 102 FM.